All right, welcome to another episode of Victory the Podcast.
Yeah? Oh, who are you, Doug?
I'm Doug Ellen.
And I'm Kevin Dillon.
Victory! Oh,
yeah. All right, we're going to do season 2, episode 3, Aquamansion.
I got to tell you, I don't know if the camera can see it, but there's another beer here because Dillon every time opens the beer early and then I missed my cue, so we're really having some problems getting this thing started. I have an excuse. I had a fucking colonoscopy yesterday, and I'm still reeling. What's yours, Kevin Dillon?
I'm still stressed out about my colonoscopy 5 years ago. I woke up in the middle of it. It was horrible. I hope you didn't wake up in the middle of yours.
So I did what's called a virtual colonoscopy. Now, that sounds like I'd be it on a computer somewhere. It's not. It's just a little less invasive than the colonoscopy. If you do have the polyps or anything, they can't do it, but it's safer.
Okay.
That being said, you're not put under. And it was...
Ooh.
So were you live Instagramming?
Let me tell you something.
Could have picked up a bunch of followers. Opportunity missed.
I want everyone out there to really take this seriously because, obviously we know what happened to Chadwick Boseman. And I do have some friends who... My buddy Scotty Anton got some cancer and he's fine, thank God. But
it is a very serious thing.
You got to catch it early. That being said, it was not a great day. It's a day of prep the day before.
Did you have polyps?
Well, I'm waiting for my doctor to call. And if I do have polyps, I have to go back and do the whole thing.
Yeah, they got
to
cut. Oh, they didn't cut them off.
They can't cut them off during this. So this is very.
Do you know what I think we should do for November, the three of us, for Victory the Podcast? We should do Movember.
All right.
And
I'm
raise
in.
Money for men's health. Do you know what is, Dillon? You wake up on November 1st and you shave your mustache. And you shave your face and then you cannot shave your mustache for 30 days. And whoever has the best duster at the end of the month.
Oh, I don't stand the chance.
Oh, it's fun. No,
I was
but you
about
can,
to say, you're going to kill it. You look like you were born to have a mustache.
No, but you can, believe me, I did it 1 year and I finished. I raised, I don't know, almost $20,000
for
men's cancers. And
you're a hairy gorilla, both of you guys.
But you can
chance.
It's all about the creativity with the mustache. You're just not allowed to, you can turn it into different shapes.
This right here is like 30 days. I'm like a seal. I'm not very hairy at all. I'm very smooth and silky.
You could add us fools. You look pretty hairy for
Connolly, on the other hand, he takes his shirt off and he's got a sweater under there. He's like that's a gorilla.
Well, anyway.
Thank God I have my lawnmower Manscaped 3.0.
Hey, no doubt. That's been...
I hate to keep talking about
it. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Like,
especially when they're
where's
not
mine?
Paying for it. It's got a light on it. It's,
Kevin likes to use both of them at the same time because he's so damn hairy. He's using Doug's and his.
The lawnmower gets millions of dollars of free advertising.
It really
and Connolly
does.
And Dillon get free lawnmowers. I get nothing out of it. I just have to talk. I get a colonoscopy. That's what I get.
Hey, Narod, can we confirm? Is there one coming for Doug? Did they say that? Supposedly.
That's always, by the way, when you're dealing with the businessman, Kevin Connolly, it's always supposedly it's coming. Things are coming. Lunch
oh, really,
coming,
Doug? It's supposedly? I could say the same thing for a couple of your friends and a couple of suggestions that you've made that shall remain nameless.
We will take care of that. We will take care of that. And let's wrap up the colonoscopy. But I do want to say it was a rough day. The woman said, though, a lot of people don't feel anything. I felt enough that I would have confessed to a murder. I'm not kidding. I was screaming in there.
That's scary.
It was not a comfortable day, and the day before prep was not great, but
I took it easy on you. Did you notice that? Held all jokes.
I'm in a bad mood. I had a camera shoved up my ass that took better pictures than my wedding photos were. And you wonder why I'm in a bad mood. I mean, what the fuck? You know, the nice thing was that neither of these guys checked up on me to see how I was doing. They were all
Bruce
playing golf.
Bruce Weber shot your...
we were golfing, by the way.
They were golfing.
Sorry about
by the way,
that, Doug.
By the way, wait, can I just say one thing? I don't even care because I thought you guys were going to check on me. I was just like, okay, they're not even going to check on me. But then I see them on Instagram. They're playing golf. And then I realize... They didn't even know. I just assumed
I didn't know.
Because you told the story, but you were speaking of the days generally. You were like Tuesday, then Wednesday, but you never said it was that close.
It
so
was
I
that
did,
close.
I was surprised.
You know what? I didn't get a call when I woke up in the middle of my colonoscopy. Nobody cared. Nobody cared about me.
But I would have called.
Dillon and I went out and played 18 with Joey Coldcuts and Robbie Berger, the brilliantly dumb guys.
Time,
we had a great time.
Special K, you had your best round, I believe. 88?
I shot an 88.
Shot an 88.
Is that legit?
100% legit.
Thank you, Kevin.
I mean, there was a mulligan in there, but that one
no,
mulligan.
I mean, I think, no,
one
it might have been. It might have been
allowed.
Of course.
In one what? Mulligan is allowed.
In what? I'm not a golfer, but what do you mean? Is it at the U.S. Open? Is that allowed? Did Tiger Woods win a fucking major with a mulligan?
If you're a member at a private country club, you get a Mulligan off the first tee.
Oh, well, I'm not rich enough to be a member of a private country club.
You used to take me to Brentwood all the time. Well, we always took a mulligan off the first tee. This thing about you not being rich is ridiculous.
Yeah, come on. Fucking silver spoon up your ass.
Divorce will take away that private country club
membership.
Yes,
it will.
So I lost it. But I gained two children, so we're all good and we're all happy. And Connolly. Yes.
I do personally miss Brentwood Country Club when you used to take me out all the time.
We had a good time
out
there.
Kevin never invites me to his club.
Because of COVID, they don't really let, you know, it's tough to get guests on.
Hey, dude, if you're going to want to come to my club at Wingfoot, you know, the U.S. Open golf course, you better start getting me out there, bro. That's all I'm saying right now. I'm a member at the greatest golf club in the world.
Dylan forced me to use a club that I didn't want to use, and I was like, I hate this, and I fucking crushed Dylan's
fucking
three
wood. I'm like, why are you using this rescue? You got 250 yards. He took the three wood out, and he ripped it, smacked it. He hit about 225.
Yeah, I nailed it. Right down the center. I mean,
right down the middle. Know. I mean, he was right in front of the green after that.
Dylan is a real golfer. Connolly is new to the game. So do you think he's got real potential?
Oh, he's already
like
a real
so
golfer.
Where do you think he can get? What do you think his best round of his life will be going forward? Ever.
Oh, he's gonna break 80.
Wow.
Yeah. He's gonna break. He's gonna shoot, you know,
high 70s, low 80s.
I think he might even shoot mid 70s because he's into it.
Is he playing from the ladies' tips or is he playing from the ladies' tips?
I've shot 2 under before on a 72 par golf.
Where's he shooting from? These are the tips.
Shooting from the blues.
We play from the blues. And by the way, Rancho is not an easy golf course.
Wow.
It's not easy.
Very ready to get back on some ice skates. It's been a long time playing a little hockey with you.
Mike Young will tell you.
I don't fight, but I had some good hand eye coordination.
You're an athlete.
KC would throw the gloves off. You got to be careful.
I know.
Yank that jersey right over your head, bro.
Those Irish guys are fucking ready to go.
Me and Connor. Do you know what me and Connor would do to you on the ice?
By the way, Connolly keeps kissing Connor McGregor's ass, but he DM'd me, Kevin. He didn't DM
you. Because you were making him uncomfortable.
By the way, I tried to follow him, but he doesn't have an Instagram.
Yeah, he does. Notorious MMA.
He's notorious.
Yeah, he's got 30 million followers.
Hard one to find, though.
Ooh, he's got 30 million followers. Doug knows, like, to the number.
He's got a blue check also.
You track other dudes' followers, which
I'm a little obsessed with Connor. I want him on the podcast for you guys.
He's
I'm doing that for
he's
you.
Just he's just so character. He's so great fighter.
I would have anxiety if he was on the podcast.
he might want that chair that you took, but maybe he'll sign it. We're going season 2, episode 3, Aquamansion. When we're done, we got Ralph Macchio coming into studio.
Ralphie boy.
Let's get into this episode. Do you remember this episode? Yes.
One of my favorites.
Really?
Let me get my notes.
I got my friend Larry's daughter is kind enough to do Kevin's job for him, and she writes notes of the episode, and then Kevin goes, oh, yeah, I think I was on this show. So anyway, and by the way, I have gotten some DMs that want and request Kevin Connolly to prepare more diligently for the show.
Really? Yeah, I don't want to use you guys as a springboard, but if I could promote another podcast that we have coming out here, The Dossier, which is the LAPD cover-up of the Biggie Smalls murder, where we have the FBI agent that was on the case speaking for the first time. So, you know, I love Victory, the podcast.
You've been talking about this one for years
now, that,
so I'm excited.
But, like, we're editing.
Yeah, we get it. There's
but the dossier, September 17th. Sorry.
Yeah.
By the way, that's what Dylan used to do when he'd come onto the set of Entourage. He'd say, I'm going to be pretty good today, but I'm doing Poseidon at the same time. So, sorry if I don't know anything about what's happening.
I'm working on a $200 million major motion picture. I might give you guys a little bit of my attention.
So I want to give you a little background on Aquamansion, which really this story did stem. We've mentioned him on this podcast before. Mike Young, comedian extraordinaire, guy who was so busy that he was unavailable to read for the part of E.
He's not that busy.
Okay. But Mike Young, what happened was, I guess I mentioned that I was going, the only one time I went to a Playboy Mansion party, I was going and Mike said, can you get me on the list? I got him on the list and Mike went out and bought some expensive pajamas and then I couldn't quite deliver or I had somebody else I needed on the list and I had to tell Mike he couldn't go. So he says I didn't put him in the trunk. As I remember, we did put him in the trunk. It really doesn't matter, but that's where the whole
episode, it's a tough one to cop to all these years later.
Yeah.
You would stoop so low to get in the trunk of a car to get into the Playboy Mansion.
I thought you were going to tell me you got the lifetime ban because that is a real thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the lifetime ban is when you would mess with one of Hefner's girls.
By the way, if you ever just like a little Kevin Connolly thing, like everybody always talks about E, and I said this to Kevin before we started today. Some people think he's like the party pooper, and I guess I realize it.
I had a great line in this episode, right?
He starts in Barney's where he's just like, yeah, I've been to the Playboy Mansion.
It's
not
sucks.
That great. Okay. But the reality is, out of everyone on this show, every person I've ever had on this show No offense to you, Kevin Dillon. I'm not even sure it's a compliment that I'm saying. Kevin Connolly is the most fun, the most...
Dillon. You're right. You're right.
But also the he's the most
traditional. He's been to the mansion way more than both of us combined.
But I'm not even talking to
mansion. He's saying that I'm not like a stick in the mud like E in real life is what he's saying. Well, it's nice because people are then pleasantly surprised when I hang out with them. They're like, oh, wow, you aren't a total stick in the mud deadbeat.
You're a complete animal. I had no idea.
So anyway, so that it gets us into this first scene. We open up and we're in Barney's,
very early in the morning.
Yeah. So what do you remember about that day?
Whenever we would shoot in places like that, we had to be out by the time they opened. Yes. So when we would shoot in Barney's, in order to control Barney's, we would be in there when it was literally almost still dark outside.
I do remember it was a long walk and talk.
Up those stairs.
I believe we banged out about three pages in one shot. I love those walk and talks.
Yeah. And again, for anyone who's listening, like a lot of times we would try to shoot the show like a documentary where these guys had to know everything and get it in one take. Yeah.
Watch for the no cut. You know, there's no cut in there.
Yeah.
I love seeing scenes where there's no cut.
And it's just pure
actors
good
have
acting.
Have to be on point. Yes,
yeah.
It is.
It's so funny listening to Dylan say like this. He hated that so much when we started. It was unbelievable.
I like a close-up, so. I mean, you're getting a close-up on a walk and talk, you know?
That is true. And
I live in here, bro.
It will always be a debate.
Dylan jumped on board with the walk and talks early.
Once we started getting those early days.
Yeah, well, eventually he was like, I can go play golf now. Yes. I mean, but Dylan, and look, there is an argument to be made. And I say it even on this podcast. When I see the clips, when we get to your face, and you're a handsome guy, but your face is fucking funny. I just laugh when I see
you. You call me a funny face? What are you trying to say?
What are you saying? Funny how?
I'm funny, like ha-ha kind of funny?
I don't know what to say. I just really do. I like you when I see you so much more than in real life. It's just like this great, like, the
you like him more? Okay, that was weird. Do you like him or do you not like him?
Or do you love me?
I do like him, but,
kind of love.
We know we got to coddle Kevin Dillon because we know, he's a sensitive man.
He's got a LeBron vibe to him.
He does. By the way, Dylan is the LeBron of this crew.
The only feeling I have is pain.
Dylan is the LeBron of the Victory Podcast. We got to kiss his ass a little bit. We got to make sure he's feeling.
I'm Steve Kerr.
I'm out of here.
Behind the scenes.
I mean, Dylan's had more traffic problems. There's a pandemic going on. Dylan has traffic problems more than anybody. There's no one on the road right now. And Dylan's like, it took 3 hours from Malibu. I mean, the truth is we don't know where he was.
You guys live around the block.
Exactly.
That's what he says every week.
No doubt.
But anyway, we love everybody. So anyway, we're in this thing. I love a bunch about this scene because you learn a lot
about
it.
We're in what thing? What are you talking about?
We're in Barney's, thing. You know the thing.
But
we're in Barney's, and we learned some good stuff here. The turtle's making $200 a week, which always just makes me laugh.
But in 2005,
Yeah, so it's like 300 now. He's making like 300.
350.
He's also got free room and board, but whatever. So
he couldn't afford the pajamas.
He could not afford the pajamas and has to ask E.
I have to say, though, there's nothing about what Turtle was wearing that looked like pajamas at all. It looked like a hoodie.
Yeah.
I mean, he was wearing a hoodie.
Pajama section. I don't know.
They were pretty strict about that stuff at the Playboy Mansion. So maybe Entourage pushed the envelope there a little bit. But for the most part, they will not let you in if you're not in pajamas.
Yeah, you got to be in the right outfit. And by the way, again, not to, I was not a guy who ever, as you both know, who was going out.
You're not a Playboy Mansion guy.
I was just not a go out guy.
You don't
guy.
Fit in there, bro.
But I
you got to be super manly.
Right.
But that
the grotto,
night.
The grotto's not for you, bro. How about a word from our sponsors, though?
Either of you ever really sneak into the mansion? Did that ever happen?
I didn't have to do that, bro. Yeah. I got invites.
You know what? I was actually fortunate enough to be on the list as well.
All right.
As a matter of fact, I got the permanent, anytime I want to go, I forget what they call it, but I could show up the mansion.
What does that mean? Like breakfast at 8 a.m.?
Yes.
Well, it's like a standing
Hefner
reservation.
Gave me a standing, my name will always be on that list.
Is that
but did
from
you
Entourage?
Have a drive on?
Yes.
Or did you have to go in the shuttle with Doug?
No. I did do the shuttle a couple times, but it was after Entourage that Mr. Hefner gave me the open invite, I guess is what you call it, right? An open invite?
The open invite. I'm sure you were there a bunch of
times. I mean, I don't want to...
I kissed a lot of butt. I'm not going to lie.
I don't obsess about this, but what do you mean an open invite?
It means that whenever there's an event at the mansion, your name is automatically...
Don't get mad at me, Connolly, just because you missed the fucking Playboy Mansion.
He's mad at me because he was in on that automatic invite. He was banned. Lifetime banned.
I got suspended.
Connolly was suspended from the Playboy Mansion for roughhousing with his friends at the party.
Didn't we have to fight to get him in?
No, that is not true.
Wait a second. When we were filming,
No.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
We had a fight to get you in, bro. Oh,
my God.
Joked around. No, lies.
This is exactly like the show. You're so right. I forgot about this. We had to make calls because they didn't want Connelly on the premises.
That is a lie.
Because of the Halloween incident.
And the incident, just so we're clear, was roughhousing with his friends.
It was before we shot the episode. So you guys had a clear.
We were roughhousing with my friends and they thought it was serious and we got basically jumped by security.
You threw a couple security guys around too, if I recall.
But the whole thing was that we were afraid, we were getting out in front of it and we were afraid that on the day, if somebody said something, so there was a call made, but it wasn't like nobody had to get me in to the mansion.
I don't know.
I don't know. I thought there were some producers that had to make some calls and go, he's not that bad. We swear.
I swear he will be sober.
He's an animal.
He will not touch the monkey cage. I promise. Kevin Dillon, I just want to say, all the times I make fun of you, the fact that you came up with that memory that he was trying to hide and bury for life.
Yes, he's been trying to bury.
We had to make calls.
That is a lie.
Yes. There might have been payments made for all I know.
That's crazy, the lies that you tell yourself.
And I think I might, if you watch the scene closely with Hugh Hefner, you might see him see Connelly and kind of do it like a...
he's like, I'm banned this motherfucker. What the hell is he doing here?
I was trying to kind of like lay low, like duck and bond, like hopefully out of sight, out of mind.
Let's just say I worked up with Hefner, Mr. Hugh Hefner, on his lines and kind of made him feel comfortable.
He kissed his ass so he could get on the fucking drive-on list.
I wanted to be on that automatic list every time.
By the way, Hugh is a legend. Rest in peace.
And great guy, too. I loved him.
But that moves us on to the next day. The boys are having lunch with Sean and Marvin. Sean is still waiting to hear from Hef. Everything I love about this episode is, and it is real, a movie star who's a working movie star, which Vince appears to be at the start of this episode, is worried about nonsense like getting his brother into the Playboy Mansion and buying fish and all this stuff. And you have Marvin, who's based on my father, Marvin, the accountant, who tells me I'm broke to this day every single day, is basically worried about them. And we learn a lot about these guys and where they're from, because Marvin ultimately tells them they can buy a $1 million house, which where they're from, they're, oh my God.
Wow, we got $1 million. They're thinking they're going to get a sick house for $1 million.
And I love Turtle's line, like, my mother's house was 150 grand and had a skylight. And I don't know about you guys, where I grew up, if you had a skylight back then, you were big. You were rich. If you had a skylight in Merrick, Long Island.
Newish house.
Yeah.
It's new.
Yeah. You had, but also it was like people, they put them in.
You had a skylight, Doug.
You know what? My mother put in a skylight late and people thought we were rich in that house in Merrick.
I have a skylight in my house.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, what we learned.
From the 70s.
What we learn in this town, even then, $1 million was not going to get a house that four guys were going to comfortably live in and feel good about at a movie star.
Even the house they bought for $4.5 million, I'm like, are you kidding me? That's a $12 million house.
Yeah,
we'll
get to Brando's house because the price on that house is, you know, I have that is ridiculous. Yeah, the guys go and check out this house for $1 million, which what I wanted to talk to you about, your first house, Kevin. I looked over at Conley, by the way. He's on his fucking other podcast.
Sorry, I'm working on some other stuff. Some other stuff.
Dossier.
Sorry, what were we saying?
By the way, it's amazing how much stuff we promote here and we don't get paid for any of it. Dossier, the podcast, Lawnmower.
By the way, the fucking Manscaped. They've been getting away with murder. They better send Doug a fucking lawnmower. We've been advertising them for free.
And I don't want to forget this, by the way, but that time at the mansion when I was there, that one party, guess who was there? Sammy Sosa. And guess what movie? Guess what movie Sammy Sosa was in, Connelly?
Kissing a Fool?
Yeah, baby! No way. True story. Sammy Sosa. I believe the first time anyone ever shot on the field at Wrigley Field, that was me, Sammy Sosa. Anyway, so, but the guys look at a $1 million house, which is shit in LA, even in 2005. So do you guys remember that? Because I remember when I was buying my first house, thinking like I had some money and going around and going, oh my God, this is a horrible place to live.
By the way, it was not a bad house. It was a beautiful craftsman style house, which would be probably worth $2 million.
I'm sorry. What were we talking about?
We're talking?
Get your head out of your ass.
You're talking about the house.
We're talking about the fact, and even now today, Los Angeles, California, when you have a budget for a house and Vince has $1 million, which he thinks is going to be something exciting.
Right.
And then they go look at houses where Turtle's like, we're talking cribs. We can't live here, you know? So did you guys have that experience when you bought your first house? Like you had a budget? You thought you were going to find something nice?
Well, when I bought my first house. I paid $250,000 for it.
In Los Angeles?
In New York. Larchmont, New York.
Wow. Yeah, you're not.
And it's worth a whole lot more than that now. But I bought it in my early 20s. I was 21, 22.
I had a lot of sleepless nights when I first bought my house. I'm not going to lie. I stepped right out, a little bit out of my comfort zone. Not crazy.
The one in the hills?
Yeah. The time, you know, again, it's season three or whatever. My business manager said, Kevin, if this show gets canceled, this is going to be the shortest stay anyone's ever had in a house.
Yeah. Tom Carr.
Kevin and I have the same business manager.
Yeah. And that's
what I kept telling you, Kev. I said, this show's going to keep going, bro.
I think that happened with the Deadwood guys. Like, Deadwood comes out, it's a smash hit, and one of those dudes bought a massive house, and then the show got canceled, and he had to sell it.
I don't know that story, but that's sad and amazing.
But I'm saying, like, even though we knew the show was going to go, and I remember when this was. It was very early in the morning, and Doug called. Did you remember this, Dylan? This is when I decided that I was going to pull the trigger on the house. Yeah. Doug walked us, me, you, Adrian, and Jerry walked us down the block on Sunset Boulevard and said, you know, we spoke to HBO, and they're going to try to take this. They want to take this to distance. So we knew, assuming people didn't drop dead, we were going to do whatever.
Well, Kev, I bought my house right before you bought your house, if you recall. Right. And I bought it in Malibu, and I paid a crazy number. And then the
market crashed. Doug, you lived across the street from the Menendez brothers, right?
I, like Raymond, I bought a house. My ex-wife and I, we bought a house right across the street from her parents. And about eight houses away was the Menendez house.
Wow.
You know, Elm Drive in Beverly
Terrible
Hills.
Famous crime. Famous
Nightmare
crime.
On Elm Street.
I was up for that. I came really close for...
Nightmare on Elm Street?
Yes.
Which role?
The Menendez brothers.
Bro, you were fucking spot on for Lyle Menendez.
I'm pretty sure I turned it down because they were doing two of them. They were doing like three of them.
Right. I don't know what it is, but the Menendez brothers, anyone who doesn't know it, you can look up documentaries. Interesting story. And Dylan, actually, you look central casting for one of the Menendez brothers. So
they're still in jail. They've been in jail since 1989.
Way, maybe they'll make a movie about their life now. The Menendez brothers in jail. So there's still a part for Dylan waiting somewhere out there.
I'll be typecast as one of the Menendez brothers after that.
Moving on.
So we're in the car, and this is where we learn that Macho, who's coming into studio via Zoom very shortly. We learned that Macho is the reason for your ban. You know?
Yeah.
You talk about him.
He freed the monkeys.
Yeah.
And I guess some model got her face bit by a chimpanzee or something.
Well, for people that, like Doug, that haven't been to the mansion. No. Hefner's, the Playboy Mansion grounds are famous for the monkey cages.
There's a zoo. There's
and
like
it's
a
fun thing to do when you have a couple drinks in you. You go for a walk and you see some monkeys.
But, you know, if you free the chimps, I mean, they could literally rip your hand.
Well,
right
they'll eat your nose off, too. They'll eat anything.
So, it's actually a bad joke when you think about it. The model getting attacked by a chip would not go well. It would be a disaster. I mean,
it would still work today. I disagree. with everything.
And then we'll see. You know, here, the next scene is at the Warner studio. What a greatly written scene, right? You know how this happened? This was 100% real. I pulled up to the lot at Universal Studios. There's the real Ari Emanuel. He pulls into an assigned spot of somebody. Maybe it was Peter Hill. Maybe I made that name up. I don't know. I go, Ari, this is an assigned spot. He goes, who the fuck knows who this guy is? And I go, Ari.
I don't even know that guy.
I go, Ari, I'm using this in the show. And he goes, use it. He goes, you could never write me as good as me. That's what Ari said to me. And the truth is, Ari Emanuel is pretty unbelievable.
Yeah,
you guys ever dealt with him?
He's the real deal.
He's the real deal.
I never dealt with him, but I know him and he's a great guy. I love him.
The next scene to me, I remember very well, was fun to shoot with Paul Ben Victor. Is that where we go in and it's Dana Gordon and
Constance Zimmer.
Constance Zimmer. And we're talking
about...
Was that
our first time seeing her?
I think it was our first time seeing both of them. Paul Ben Victor's from The Wire. Constance Zimmer, Dana Gordon was on the show for years and is both amazing. And we got to get both of them on.
They're both great.
Is that the one where they wheel in the suit?
Yes, Kevin.
The ridiculous suit.
That's where they wheel
That's
in the suit.
That's the best. One of
that
my
was
favorites.
Funny.
Yeah, I love that
I
suit.
I mean, Adrian kind of smirked like, there's no way I'm putting on those tights. Like, there's no way I'm wearing that goofy suit. And I get it.
And
I wouldn't want to be seen.
Doug, how
that
much
thing.
Went into that kind of stuff? The Aquaman suit.
A lot of meetings,
producers, HBO, everybody, right?
Not really HBO because they kind of trusted us. But, you know, all of us, Lev and I, we spent a lot of Weiss. We spent a lot of time on that suit because we wanted it to be ridiculous, but possible. I'm not 100%
right,
sure that suit is
to
possible.
To be able to Adrian to roll his eyes and go, I'm not wearing that.
But you also wanted to believe that Dana Gordon and Paul Benvictor, I'm blanking on what Paul Benvictor's character's name was. Alan? Was it Alan? Nice. Maddie Stu, let us know. But, you know, you wanted to believe that they believed this was going to be a $100 million movie. And what's interesting, really, at that time, and you say director's medium, at that time, especially, if James Cameron was directing your movie, that suit became cool. If James Cameron thought it was cool, because you knew he was going to make a great movie. And so,
I don't think James Cameron saw that suit.
James Cameron would not have signed off on that suit.
He would have thrown out that suit. But if James Cameron said, I like that suit, you would have believed there was probably a good reason for it. But I love that, you know, he's convincing him, or Ari actually is convincing him that it's going to look totally different on film, you know? Like,
Wait till you see that thing on camera. It's going to light up on camera.
Well, he says Tom Cruise is, you know, 5'3", and on camera he looks like Yao Ming. So it's, you know, it's what it is. So
word from our sponsors.
So the next scene we get to is at the Brando house, which is the Victor Maitland house from Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
An amazing house. And we're talking about it in 2005 as being $4.3 million, which was ridiculous then.
Yes.
Because that house was probably, I don't know, what's the guess on that house?
I'm saying 10, 12.
Then.
I was saying eight, nine.
No, I'm saying that house is, if it's in Beverly Hills, that house is over $20 million now.
Could be.
You know, you're talking a lot of property, old Spanish house, and it was a beautiful house.
Now, Brando had nothing to do with that house, right? Did he actually live in that house?
No. No, nothing to do with that house, but I like that Vince is like, let's buy it because Brando lives there.
You know, well, and people do that. People
gotta
do that.
Have it.
Yeah, and then Ari's trying to convince him, well, Brando did Superman, so why don't you want to do Aquaman, you know? But yeah. Then Turtle's jumping in going, but he didn't wear the costumes or whatever. So.
He didn't wear tights.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I had a great line there, too. Costumes could be very liberating. Do you remember that? It was like when I was a Ninja Turtle or whatever it was. I forget what the line was.
Yeah, and that's based. That is also based on a real thing. I grew up with a kid who was a serious actor his whole life, and I saw him at City Walk in one of those suits one day, and it's the sadness of this business. I think he was pretty talented, but he might still be at City Walk. I haven't been there.
Boulevard of Broken Dreams, bro. Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
And Vince is talking about that he wants Johnny Depp's career, which it's weird looking at that now because we all wanted Johnny Depp's career. And now Johnny Depp is just embroiled in the courts. And
yeah, I think you're going to see, you'll see Johnny have a second act. You'll see him.
Johnny's doing great.
Johnny's great.
Yeah.
Cry me a river for Johnny. Yeah.
One of the great American actors.
You know what the fun thing, too, about the play? I'm thinking about the Playboy Mansion and the lines and, you know, even when you were on the list, you know, you would go and you would park at UCLA and get on the shuttle and all this kind of stuff until you, and if you would have your friends and somebody was always up to something, and until you like broke the plane of that doorway of the mansion,
yes,
it was very stressful. Yeah. Even when your name was on the, like, what if my name is not there? What if they can't find it? It was like super stressful until you got into the building.
You know, when you had a drive on, like I did, it wasn't so bad.
Right.
You know, I mean, for you, it must have been horrible.
And I just want to have an aside. We took a break. Kevin Dillon went to the bathroom. I just looked up at my phone, and Kevin Dillon had posted. Did you do that from the bathroom, or is that your team?
My team.
Dillon, you have a team. It's
my peeps. My peeps are on top of it.
This is unbelievable. He posted from the bathroom.
Well, I didn't originally post that because I felt like I was bragging about my cars. But, you know, I bought them cheap, and I built them. I didn't want to post it.
What's that run you a week, Dad?
I'm not paying for it. I got a buddy.
You got free people? What the fuck is that? It's ridiculous. Well,
free furniture in his house. Free fucking
people,
Instagram team.
And he drives American cars.
Getting back to it, we get to Ralph Macchio's house, which is just a great scene. And you two just had like an awesome chemistry. Now, I'm saying this for a couple of reasons. I want Dillon on Cobra Kai. He needs the gig. Netflix, if you're listening,
we're
going to
plant the seed in the interview.
Dillon will take down Billy Zabka. By the way, Cobra Kai.
Billy Zabka is one of the great 80s villains.
And is amazing
back
on this
school.
Show.
Back to School.
He was great then.
He was a great villain in Back to School. Great villain.
He was a great villain in a bunch of those movies. He's awesome. I mean, he's awesome, and he's really great in Cobra Kai. So, but
let's get him on the podcast.
Let's get him on the podcast. Yeah. They're too big for us now. We're lucky we got Ralph now. Ralph Macchio scene at the house. Let's talk about this. Do you remember this?
I do. I remember it well.
Tell me. Give me something.
Well, I remember he didn't really like the house to begin with. He was like, my house is nicer than this.
Right.
So it was a smaller house, you know. So I kind of get that.
But something that's happened on this show very often.
And rightfully so. He's been smart with his money, and he's got a nice house.
But I don't of course, he's a success. But what I'm saying is on this show, when people played themselves, they didn't want to be seen, even though they do crazy stuff, they didn't want to be seen as unsuccessful. And because people thought a lot of this was very real.
You know who's the one person that came on and literally was like, I don't give a fuck what. You can make me whatever you want. James Woods.
James Woods.
James Woods didn't give a shit. He's like, I'll be mean, nice. Because also, too, people are right to protect their... It's something that I would look at if you're playing yourself. Yeah, you want to be able to represent.
Jimmy Woods still doesn't give a shit. If anyone wants to see some action, look at Jimmy Woods' Twitter. James Woods, who's an amazing actor, and I watched The Onion Field this week. Great movie. Everyone should see it. All right, so back to Ralph Macchio at his house. What was going on in that scene?
It was just me saying, hey, dude, you got to confess. You got to tell Hef it was you that freed the monkey. He's like, go fuck yourself, drama. It wasn't me. And then I'm like, I got to kick your ass. He's like, he does the karate pose. He goes, you want to try it? And I look at it and I go, well, he might know a couple things. I better walk away.
We're going to have to talk to Ralph.
Really, really good stuff.
We're going to have to talk to Ralph about that because I wanted him to do the crane.
Of course he did.
Oh, if he could have done the crane, it would have been great.
I think he made the right move.
He did make the right move because he might not have been doing what he's doing right now.
No, but I think this was more subtle. I think it was, the scene is really real. It's actually, whether it was written as
real. Macchio's no sellout.
But whether it was written as real as it is, it's really good. And you really feel for Dylan. It's like begging for a pilot. And like, he's so concerned with the mansion.
The mansion's all I got, bro.
But as soon as he sees there's a job opportunity, it's like, you got a pilot? Like, and that is the real deal in Hollywood. And someone hears, someone's not working and you hear someone else is working. It's like, wait, what's going on with you? So it's very real.
By the way, all of that cast from The Outsiders, none of them sold out. They all
successful group of people in that
they
cast.
They kind of stuck to the art end of it.
All right, the guys get to the mansion. There is that moment where, like Connolly says, you actually do feel that real stress of whether you're going to get in. But these guys have drama in the trunk. So there's extra extra stress going on. I remember it was hard to get you in that trunk, wasn't it?
It was a small car.
I had no problem in that trunk until I got locked in there.
Oh, that's what it was.
That's what happened.
Freaking locked in that trunk.
Right, and the
battery died in the car. Anxiety. And the only way, there was no key. It was a keyless trunk.
Of course, that's why
I'm hearing everyone outside. They pretend like I can't hear them, but they're like, uh-oh, we got a little situation. The trunk won't open. I'm like,
right, you hear walkie-talkies going off all over the place.
And they'll go, hey, Kevin, just try and relax in there. And just, I'm like, get the fucking trunk open, man.
Were you getting nervous? Were you panicking?
I wasn't. I knew that every trunk has got...
A latch.
So I started feeling around for the latch.
But who knows? That Maserati probably has a hidden latch.
I found that. I found the latch long before I unlatched it. I said, I'm going to let these guys sweat it out. Doing this for a little while.
Let them sweat it out.
And then they're like, okay, Kevin, just calmly look around for the latch. Meanwhile, I was completely calm. I had my hand on the latch.
By the way, I'm sitting there with the owner's manual, flipping through it, trying to find where the latch is.
Yeah, by the way, I think
but it was scary for a second.
I think there is a law.
Oh, my God. I could be stuck in this.
I think there is a law that came out in the 90s that there has to be an exit route. I think you can't lock someone in the trunk. But that I didn't think about it
until now. I think that's a fair law.
Yes. Yeah. I think that was probably pretty scary.
As soon as I heard all the talk from above, I was seeking out that latch.
So did you use that
in
your performance?
You knew where that latch was before you got
there. No, I just wanted to let the crew kind of suffer a little
appreciate
bit.
Appreciate you.
Did you use it in your performance? We open up the trunk and you're busted.
I'm busted.
And you know, I love that you know the security guard, Patrick.
I called him Patrick after my buddy Pat Fahey.
Right.
I'm like, Pat.
That's right.
And then he's like, take a hike. Go hitch on Sunset. And I'm like, Patrick, how could you? I yelled to college kids, and then Turtle finds a way into the mansion. But he's like, I found a weakness in the
security detail. We get into the mansion finally. A couple of things that happened during this thing. We really didn't have enough money to fill this mansion with extras. We had to put a black screen, do you remember? And basically cut it in half so we could actually look like it was filled. The scene ends, Aretha Franklin, great song, which Venner did not pick, I'm sorry to say. Love Aretha, rest in peace. And then, you know, it just is an amazing vibe with these guys at the end. It's just really exactly what the show is. Wish fulfillment, friendship, and they're going to go buy a house with the money he's getting from that.
Paulie Shore was great. Paulie Shore was great. He was the one who freed the monkeys. We had that great thing.
Oh,
so we all hang out.
And just one thing about that, we ran out of time. I didn't even think we had an ending that was going to work because, do you remember this? It was so late. We're running out of our 14 hours, whatever the hell it was. And we barely got the Pauly stuff done. The cut to me is still very weird. It just doesn't totally work, the cut. But
I'm good.
Everybody else
also
was too.
Dylan, that's where we're talking about the Aquaman sequels. And you're like, that's 1.2 for E. That's where the 1.2 came from. That's where
you realize what E's going to get paid.
And Turtle wants a raise. And Turtle wants a raise because he's getting 200 a week. And then,
but the way it ends, I love because Vince leans in. He goes, we can get this house if I do this movie. He leans into Ari, goes, do I get suit approval? Because he doesn't want to be seen in those goofy tights.
Yeah. Did he get suit approval?
Great. He must have because he did the movie.
But that's the end. That's a great ending.
Supposedly gets suit approval, but we're going to find out in the next episode, which we'll talk about, that this deal might not be done yet, which happens all the time in Hollywood. We're bringing in Ralph Macchio, Entourage cameo, star of honestly the best show that's going on the quarantine right now. And amazingly enough, I saw it a few years ago, but now on Netflix, it has just blown up Cobra Kai. And we've got the ageless Ralph Macchio. Ralph. Looks like he's 15 right now.
You look great, bro.
You look great. Go on. Don't go too close. Good to see you guys, man.
Good to see you, too. Congrats on the show, man. It really is great.
You know, also, Ralph, it might feel like we're calling you to get you on the podcast because of, like, the recent success of your, you know, career exploding. But we are at this episode, coincidentally,
this
as luck would have it.
So we're on, right?
So thanks for joining us.
When we resold the thing to Netflix, I purposely timed out the release
for this.
It would be an Aquamansion time.
That is awesome.
You think you're running this? I'm running
it. I like
it. We knew you were.
You know what? Ralph is like, you know, like Dylan can't really share into this, but like Connolly and I, Ralph is Long Island strong. We grew up there together. Ralph and Connolly are like the Nicholson and Diane Cannon of the Islanders.
I would say that's it.
Doug's a bit of a bandwagon jumper. Like, he wears the hat during the playoffs, but I wonder where he was a few years ago. With
Ranger
the
fan, for
sub
sure.
Sub-500 team.
Let me tell you something.
I think we went to Ranger games together, Doug, you and me.
Rick Nash was kind enough to let us go to the game. That was very difficult, but it was for promotion. But I can name every single player from the Islanders and their numbers from like 79, 80. You
let's
can't
move
do it.
On from the Islanders.
Let's talk to Ralph. Let's stop. Let's because we got little time with Ralph Macchio here. Big hot show. How is that feeling? I mean, this great show, which everyone loved 3 years ago, has now exploded on a whole different level. How does that feel?
It's amazing because it's sort of like a rebirth, a second rebirth of the franchise. You know, I mean, these guys, the guys who are writing the show, just have it down. They are the super fans. They were 6 years old when they saw this movie. 100 times and are living their dream, you know? And so they really have a handle on how to sort of embrace nostalgia and then be relevant for today. And that's what's kicking it across the board in all quadrants, fathers and sons and kids and our age and above that are just sucking it up and having the Netflix, you know, stage. I mean, YouTube was cool because Netflix always wanted the show, but YouTube's, you know, Netflix wanted to develop the show and YouTube said, make the show. And so that's why that decision was made in 2017. And then when YouTube changed their model, Google mandated them out of scripted. Then we were just like, please, please let us take this. Because we have a third season in the can.
Oh, you do?
Right? That, nice. That, so it was just right. And, you know, things happen for whatever reason. I can't shake this guy, but he's been pretty good to me and pretty good to the world. So that's kind of a good thing in the shit show of the world that we're dealing with now. It's kind of nice to be a warm embrace to all of it, you know?
And yes. what was your first thought when they came to you? Did you think it sounded ridiculous or did you think it sounded good?
No, this one sounded good. I said no forever. I said no 10 times before Entourage about playing myself, you know, right. I'm very protective and for just like this, that was just the smart move. I come up looking far more intelligent than I am.
Right.
You know, I waited for Entourage because I knew that was the one. No, but same thing with Cobra Kai. I think it was a combination. I was the last guy to the party. They had all the ducks in a row. They had everyone on. And, you know, because I was pretty much said no for 30 years. Just, I mean, you know how it is. Yeah. Everyone's got itch. This is what if you and Rocky Balboa were related? We all both fought together. And, you know, I mean, it was got there. we've all been in those meetings, you know.
Well, by the way, Dylan is hoping for one of those meetings. He's like, he'll fucking fight anybody as Johnny Drama. He just wants somebody to give him a reboot.
You gotta get Doug. Doug is the holdout. Doug is the Ralph Macchio right now.
So to just cut to the chase on that. These guys, I just believe they, you know, they had written Harold. They did Harold and Kumar, and they did A Hot Tub Time Machine, between the three of them. So I knew they knew how to write young and present and sort of a little edgier. And so, but I believe that they wanted to, hold up the pedestal, or hold up the, pay homage to all those things that are great from the Karate Kid film. And then it was the platforms, you know, you have the ability to tell a story, a 5-hour movie in 10 half hour parts. You didn't have that 10 years ago. You had to either be a 2-hour blockbuster that had to be bigger, louder, faster, funnier within a massive climax. So we get to let these guys breathe and dive into the gray areas and not unlike what Entourage did with those characters. They were human and multidimensional, and everybody was a little good and everybody's a little bad at times, mm-hmm. So yeah. That's what's worked.
So Ralph, one of the things about the original Karate Kid was, the Valley, Entourage did a thing on the San Fernando Valley, but Karate Kid was, I don't know, it was like the Valley was like a character, and then jump to like this new world in the business where they're shooting in the Valley in Georgia. So what's that like? What do you shoot a couple pickup days in the Valley? Like, how does that work?
Let me tell you, season one, we shot 2 days in LA, and season two, we shot 1 day in LA. So that's 20 episodes, one or two stock shots. But for the most part,
a lot of driving up and down Ventura Boulevard.
Oh, my God. listening to REO Speedwagon. That's in the ninth episode of his first season. But for the most part, there's a lot of indoors, a lot of blinds shut, sunlight. Just big arc lights just blaring through the windows.
Fake palm trees and all that, too, I'm sure.
it's the incentives and all that stuff.
It's just the new world.
Yeah.
It is. We thought for sure we'd be shooting this in L.A. For me, in New York, Atlanta's a quick pop. I could do that, be home for lunch.
Right.
So that worked. But the Georgia, the team down there and the crews and the and this, all the sets and the extras casting and that has been great, and it's
well, you it really can is do. Great. The whole cast is amazing. Zabka is like, he's unbelievable, and it makes you go, where's he been? Because he really is so good. And we talk about it a lot on this podcast. Like, it's the right actor getting the right role. All of a sudden, you realize how good they are. Kevin Dillon is an example of that. But the question about season three, because everyone. Ralph, so everyone understands, when I was growing up on Long Island, like, Ralph was the guy you wanted to be. You saw him in these movies and you thought, like, wow, he's like a regular guy like I grew up with. I wonder if I can get into this business. And Elizabeth Shue was every Long Island kid's crush. Is she in season three or no?
I have no idea.
You can't tell anything. No spoilers. I love it.
I got a Netflix gag order. Her characters lived in the show from the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's you want the wish fulfillment of this, and there's a ton of we do a great job of pulling these Easter eggs out and introducing characters that even small characters from like one or two scenes in one of the movies that all of a sudden resonates because what we call our evangelicals or hardcore Cobra Kai fans, they look for that. I mean, they go through it. They know way more than I do. Yeah. And it's kind of cool. But there are season three is broader in scope. It dives a little bit. I'm very limited what I can say, but dives into the origins of Miyagi-Do karate and also Cobra Kai. So you explore where it all came from, and it sends Daniel to Okinawa. That's one thing I could tease.
Ooh.
So there are things about the world of the Miyagi-verse that not even Daniel knew, or we as an audience, that we get to learn. And that's kind of the cool part of how you can keep the story going and it being fresh.
It's really awesome. And is there a release date yet or no?
No, we're waiting on that. We're waiting on that. We thought Netflix was going to drop all 30 episodes day one. I think it's smart what they did. They don't do much that isn't smart. And certainly for us. So it's building, it's letting the world catch up to the YouTube, you know, the people that didn't watch it, you know, 2 years ago. So I'm hoping it's quarter one or right after, you know, the ball drops. It'll be 2021, but I would imagine they're not going to wait that long, but that's right. Not in my hands.
All right. And last question on that, and then I want to get to some Entourage stuff, but are you trained in fighting? The choreography is amazing. Obviously you did it in the movie, but I think it's even more unbelievable in this show. I mean, so are you trained in this stuff, and how much of these stunts are you doing?
Well, I'm doing, listen, we have a great stunt coordinator. I mean, you know how it is. I mean, you need someone to direct that part of, and on a project like this that is so driven by action, you know, Hiro Koda and Janelle Kerfman are our two stunt coordinators. They're Emmy nominated both years. Hopefully this year, you know, all goes well, they'll get the trophy. But we train, the kids train a ton. You know, they all came. No one came in as a martial artist. I didn't come in as a martial artist in 84. I still try to figure out what I'm doing.
Right. Can you beat up Doug? Can you beat up Doug?
We pull it off. You know, Billy's more of an athlete. Zapka's definitely more of an athlete than I am. So, but we catch everything hurts, man. It used to be. I just bring off the mat and like, let's do another one. Now I'm like, did you get that? You better
get me a stunt, man.
We do have stunt. We have stunt guys because we're shooting. I mean, we're shooting 5 days an episode.
Right. That's how we were doing season one and two.
Yeah. So it's real. But it's an action show with a big cast.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And a lot of young, some of them are minors. So you're losing them.
Tough.
Pumpkinning out after 8 hours. Mm. Wow. So it's work, man. The physical stuff is a lot more work. It requires a lot more preventative maintenance.
Well, it's amazing. It
I
really
need the
is.
Calf implants like drama had. Do I remember that? I recall that, right?
Yes, you could. You awesome. Called it right.
It makes you wonder about Liam Neeson and these guys that like doing these movies. I mean, Liam Neeson's in his 60s rolling around on the top of subway trains. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone saw Tom Cruise's stunt on internet the other day. I mean, it's one of the sickest things I've ever seen. I mean, it's him doing it. So, but anyway, we got limited time with Ralph.
I'm not that guy.
Me neither.
So we got limited time with Ralph. There's two things we have to get to for a second because one of my favorite books of all time, one of my son's favorite books of all time, and you worked with Kevin's brother, Matt Dillon.
Did you notice the poster behind his head there?
The
outside is right there.
Wow, I'm old because I can't even see that. Wow. Oh yeah, there it is. So anyway, one of my favorite books, amazing movie. Ralph, you were in it with Matt Dillon. I mean, everyone. That movie was Patrick Swayze and Tom Cruise.
Emilio Estevez.
Oh yeah, what a cast.
So how was that? I mean, was that experience you remembered? And
I read that book when I was 12, just like millions of other kids. I still read and, you know, required reading in many schools. And I, you know, I connected with it then. I think it was the first book I ever read, not at gunpoint by my parents and my teacher. You know, I was show me the movie. Isn't there a movie? You know,
there is that.
That's awesome.
I loved it. I connected with all those characters. And so when they were making the movie and then Coppola was doing it, I'm like, I gotta get a shot at this thing, you know? And I went in early. We did these, Matt was in New York. I was in LA at the time. You know, it was a big group audition kind of thing. Coppola mixing and matching. It's sort of a famous or infamous story of how all the actors are sitting on a soundstage watching each other, watch the director react to them. It was brutal, brutal.
Wow.
You know, I was the guy. It took a while. I just wanted that part. When I got to read other parts, I just wanted to play that part. I thought it was a fit. I'm still one of my prouder moments. It's like, I call it like your first girlfriend. You never forget that, you know, the first kiss. It's, you know, Johnny Cade is that character. And it's so funny, man. This Instagram, all this social media stuff that you have to do now. And it's exhausting.
Yeah. Dillon loves it. He's a master now. Dillon has an Instagram team
now.
Ralph, so you basically really wanted to play the lead.
Yeah, I
wanted
to play the lead.
Anytime they wanted me to read for a character that wasn't the lead, I was bothered.
No. You're right. And the cool stuff about that audition, I mean, it's like, you know, I'm doing scenes with Mickey Rourke and you're doing scenes with Dennis Quaid. Everybody's like mixing and matching. So it was kind of cool at that point. But that was, I have all these Instagram kids, is what I was alluding to. And they're all, they all think I'm still like, you know, 16.
Right.
No matter what you believe. And so like, I could be their grandfather at least. And they're just, they, all those guys, they're like, oh, Matt is so hot. Ralph and Amelia. Rob is so, it's like, it's so crazy, man. But
I still feel that way about Diane Lane. So I guess I'm crazy.
Yeah,
also.
So do I. So do I.
She still looks great.
She's aged well.
She has done very well. So, all right. So we know we got limited time with Ralph. So, okay. So, again, I saw you. Eight is enough. I saw everything you did.
Three wishes.
Eight is enough.
Thank God, you guys got this. Somebody's got a computer up. Right,
I swear,
now.
No. Ralph. I swear to God, I looked at nothing. The three wishes of Billy Greer. Did you ever see that?
No.
It was
Benjamin Button.
No. It's killer because I'm playing a guy with an aging disorder that ages aggressively forward. So it's sort of the antithesis of what
Benjamin
I've
Button.
With.
Yeah.
Benjamin Button. That's crazy.
But it was a huge movie of the week. It was called The Three Wishes of Billy Greer. And
everybody got an affliction of the week. Yeah, I had one of those.
An affliction.
By the way, Ralph, fucking Colin's trying to embarrass me because I was totally prepped for this and I don't know that one. And I was like a boy in the plastic.
Don't run out. Don't run out.
I was a big boy in the plastic bubble guy. So
it was in the golden age of the movie of the week. Like, and seriously, I mean, like that was as good. Right. It was one of those. Right. It was like Boy in the Plastic Bubble or whatever it was. Right. But it was a good movie.
All right, good.
Laura Dern was in that. Betty Buckley.
Oh, wow. All right, I am going to
do some research, bro. But Entourage, let's talk
Entourage. All right, let's talk Entourage. So, Ralph, let's sort of from the beginning, when you get the call to play yourself, you know, we came up in the room. I think Rob Weiss and I were thinking about this and going, this would be awesome if we could get Ralph. And we're pretty early on in the show then, so the first season had aired. But do you know what the show is when you get that call, and what are you thinking?
It's funny. First of all, you got to tell me. I want to know at some point where I was on that list. You know,
one.
Number
absolutely
one.
Wow. I'm not even kidding because I think
he's not lying to you.
I really
That's
do
true.
Think Rob Weiss said it. Like, if we could get Ralph to do the freaking crane, like, I'm like, yes. I think I remember going, he's never going to fucking do that. There's no
That's
way.
Right.
You did not do the crane. But you did do a little nice karate move.
I keep it in my back pocket. right. No, but I got the call and it came from an agent in New York and he said, is this, you know, to play yourself? And I was always like, ah, because I know it's I've always been conservative. It was a one joke. It was the one-off. Everybody gets a lot more out of it than I do.
Right.
You know, it only solidifies. Takes that bright picture and makes it brighter, you know, and it's a good thing, but it's also makes other things challenging. So I initially bucked at the idea and then we came back and I think it was me and C. Thomas Howell. You might've had it that early.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, really?
The score came in.
Yep.
I know CT passed. We joke about it now. Dude, what were you doing?
He's a member of your golf course, Kevin Connolly. I believe CT is a member.
The show is just launching, and by the time I came around, then it was a legitimate hit.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was so it was totally the right move. I think we might have had a creative call. I think I had a call with Weiss, and I don't know. I guess you at that point, and it was the Playboy Mansion for 12 to 14 hours. So that I checked with my wife. Cool if I do something, the Playboy Mansion. And she, at that point in my career, she was like, "What? Just get the hell out of the house. I don't care where you're going. Just shoot something." So it was like it was the perfect storm of time for me to do something like that. And then I was we shot the Playboy Mansion stuff first, right? For me, I mean that was early on. Then I had a bunch of days off, so I was sucking up the LA time trying to figure out my next one while I was waiting for the scene with Kevin, which I love. It's on the reel.
It's really awesome.
I love that scene. I love
it. I got nothing but the mansion is one of my favorites.
I got nothing else. I really love it. I watched it last night and it's phenomenal. And I love when you, and I don't remember if I said something to you. It feels like a film noir moment when you at the end are like, We'll do
Cuervo,
like the old days, you know? It's like you guys are like these old timers.
I'll see
like
you there, Eli
motherfucker. And,
exactly. That's exactly right. And it's like, Dylan, I love Dylan begging you, which he might beg you to get on Cobra Kai at this point also. So.
Hey, we might have something there.
You know, yeah, beg. You just give me a buzz. Right. And one of the stories, the things I remember is when we were shooting that scene, I think it was first up in the morning, the one, you know, when Kevin comes up to Ralph's house. So many people say, is that your real wife? Is that your house? And people are so... But
I was doing a little officer in the gentleman thing. Like, I got nowhere else to go.
No, chill. I got no place left to go.
I got nothing but. And when he did Nothing But the Magic, you kept going back. You were redoing the. Like, you'd stop, you'd do it again. Because I knew it seemed like you had in your head just what you wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So you're doing like, you're resetting.
Yeah, let me do that line again.
He's known for that.
Yeah. I know to go back until I get it to
He had it on the second one, but we waited 6 or 7.
Yeah. Matt wasn't like that on The Outsiders, was he, Ralph? It was a little easier going. Matt
remember his line. No, Kevin remembers his line. Matt had his line. That's a different story. It's a different Dylan.
That's awesome.
Yes. I love them both, man. And I love when I got done shooting that scene and Doug was at Video Village or whatever. And I did, you know, he goes, I ought to kick your ass. And I'm sort of like, you ought to try.
That was great.
Think, okay, what am I going to give them? I'm not giving them the cringe. Yes. Who's that coming in? But then I when I went to Video Village or whatever, wherever Doug was, and we were talking about it, I said, boy, you know, the whole world is going to watch this scene. And said, how come he's not doing it? He's like, well, maybe we should come around. Maybe we should come around again. But Doug was making one last shot.
And hoping that you would do it.
I think I said something like, listen, I read the deal memo. You didn't pay for that. No, I didn't say that. But I was alluding to that.
I was a pain in the ass.
You did a nice karate move, though. You did it. Like a Bruce Lee thing.
Yeah. No, I thought it was right. I didn't want, you know, it also made the scene about these guys. The scene was quite real. You know, even when they're talking about it's a pilot, I always say, oh, you got to see what's a pilot? Oh, it's a pilot. You know, that's how they are. It's going to be on the air. Yeah, well, I mean, it's a negative pickup. So I loved all that stuff. So I felt like going to the movie would sort of, you know, take it out. Now, obviously, if I did it, it would have been in the show. I know. But it was just, I was always protective of it. I still, you know, listen, it's paid off with Cobra Kai even to this day. It's not sort of saturating over, you know, watering down the brand just for the...
I think what you did was the 100% right move. It actually made it feel real, too. Kevin's desperate to jump in.
Because Doug thinks I'm showing him up here, but, you know, Ralph, where the first time you did the crane kick, I was in... The Funnier Die that Ralph did, where he actually dropped the crane kick.
We got to see that.
That was the first time I did it because it was on my terms.
It was on your terms.
It was a way to be funny, poke fun, try to be smart, which I think it was. And I tried to get Kevin to be in the Funnier Die.
Dylan passed.
Really? I don't remember that.
I called the lawyer. I called the agent. I knew the agent. I couldn't get through.
So you settled on Connolly, which is like better than nothing.
By the way, Ralph, we can barely get the guy to show up for this podcast. So believe me, he's not easy to land.
It's traffic. A lot of traffic.
I live in Malibu.
How does Ralph know that? He says that every day. He says it every day. Traffic.
These guys live around the corner.
The Funny or Die that Ralph did is really funny because he's got such a reputation of being such a good guy. Yeah. Ralph, wasn't that what the Funnier Die was about?
Yeah. It was like a reverse intervention on a guy that is
you're too nice.
So good
right.
that even his kids and his family are asking for him to somehow fuck up so he'd be worth something.
I'm like, Ralph, you got to dial it up. You got to get yourself in some trouble. But it's funny to watch. It's a good one.
It's good. And Michael Lerner is awesome as the agent. Kevin does him. You know, Kevin's like, it's a cautionary tale. I mean, this is, you know, you got Molly recalled in it. It's a four best minutes of your day.
We're going to have to get that clip together. And the truth is, Ralph is really one of the nice guys and one of the great guys we had on the show. And before I let you go, I just want to tell you, if you ever followed Black Jaguar, White Tiger on Instagram, they've got like 8 million followers, a great like big cat sanctuary. They love the show and they're going to name two lions after the show, Miyagi and Cobra Kai.
How about that, Ralph?
So you've hit it. Netflix has hit it out of the park.
I know, it's a benchmark.
And I can't tell you how much we appreciate this. And especially now you're blowing up again.
Congratulations. Yeah. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
And by the way, I still think it was you that sprung the apes.
I do. It's me, the monkeys. I let the monkeys out. You can throw Pauly Shore under the bus.
Yes.
Ralph, did you go to the mansion back in the day?
Oh, Connolly's keeping it going. Connolly told me I had 20 in and out.
I know.
I like
last
it.
Question.
No, good question.
Last question. Were you there?
It's a great question. That was the first time there. See, I
got it. Wow. He is the nicest guy.
By the way, his wife is in the background right now.
That was Connolly's 30th time.
Yeah, exactly. Connolly has broken all records for breaking into the Mitch. But anyway, Ralph, thank you so much. Good luck. Everyone, Cobra Kai season 1 and 2. I swear to you, I'm not lying, is amazing. I know everyone's seen it anyway, but season 3 is coming soon, we hope. And best of luck.
Right. Well, thanks, guys. Ralph. We'll talk to you soon.
To your families, man. Thanks
okay,
so much.
Okay, take it easy, Ralph.
Good.
Good to see you, man.
Don't mess with me, man.
Bye.
Good.
So thank you so much, Ralph Macchio. That was awesome. And, you know, great, great, really great. Love seeing him. And that wraps up another episode of Victory the Podcast. I'm Doug Ellen at Mr. Doug Ellen.
I'm Kevin Dillon at Kevin Dillon Official. Victory!